Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'm going to tell you what you need to know. I'm going to tell you what you need to know.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now as we finish strong here on a Friday. Thank God it's Friday, Friday.
I'm going to tell you what you need.
Thank God it's Friday, Friday. You got big plans?
This weekend, no.
You're going to blow it out big time?
First weekend in a while that I have not had anything to do.
And that's kind of nice.
Going to jazz tonight, though.
Oh, there you go. Great Cajun food from jazz. Yeah. A Louisiana Kitchen, you can get it tonight.
Haven't decided which one, though.
Have not, have you? Okay.
One of our friends in the group really likes the 39 at the State Line. Likes the atmosphere. I'm like, yeah, I'm with you.
Should. As they
Which
should.
Is awesome.
Our Need to Know brought to you by our friends at Worth Harley-Davidson, I-29, just south of the airport. Hog heaven, people, if you want the best selection of Harley-Davidson motorcycles, locally owned and operated. When you step on the floor, you'll notice you're treated like family the moment you're there. Rick Worth, Chris Guerin, all the guys, absolutely fantastic. It's Worth Harley-Davidson, I-29, just south of the airport. Check them out online at WorthHarleyDavidson.com. Let's start with the commish. Brett Yormark has been quite visible here of late. He was talking as they, you know, are in the center of the discussion about expansion. Mm-hmm. That's been one of the big talks. A lot of people, as we mentioned earlier, Dennis Dodd saying this week that it's all but done. What he's being told is it's all but done. Colorado back to the Big 12. Brett Yormark said expansion was certainly one of the topics.
We did discuss expansion, had a great discussion about expansion, in fact, and we have a plan. As I've said all along, we have an appetite to be a national conference in our makeup from coast to coast. And we do believe in the upside of basketball moving forward as a collective group. That being said, we love our current composition, love the four new schools that are coming in next month. However, if the opportunity presents itself to create value, we will pursue it. I'm not going to address expansion beyond that today, but it is a focus of ours. And when we're ready to speak more in with greater specificity, we'll do so.
And regarding expansion, would there have to be full service members, expansion to full full members before, you know, say a Gonzaga basketball only?
I mean, listen, we're going to consider all options. As I said before, you know, we do see the upside in basketball moving forward for all the right reasons. We think it's undervalued and there's a chance for us to double down as the number one basketball conference in America. But football's the driver, and we all know that. But, you know, we're exploring all options and all considerations at this point in time.
Sounds like I start to think. Sounds like he's looking to get some stuff done, but
yeah,
the full member thing is like interesting.
Is there like I don't like the partial member thing.
Yeah.
Like I remember it was annoying in the Big East that like, oh, we got Georgetown, we got Seton Hall, and then we got, you know, these other schools that play football.
I agree with that.
That's kind of annoying, but I think listen. Would a league that has, let's say, your wildest dreams come true, and they add Connecticut, Gonzaga, Arizona to the mix, to what they already have? I mean, it's already the best basketball conference. Yeah. They like saying that. I mean,
and for the first time in a long time, it might actually be true.
Yeah, for sure.
They've had a nice 5 years run here.
But you know. Man, if you're KU and you're going to go, we gotta go to UConn, and then Saturday we're going to Gonzaga.
They probably wouldn't. Yeah. Back-to-back Saturdays with a home game against Arizona stuck in there. Hey, this is a tough week. We got to go to UConn and then play Arizona here and then go off to
Don't get me wrong. If you're going to make those flights, chartered flights are the way to do it.
Right.
I've been on one ever in my life, and I'm going to tell you it is like the greatest thing ever.
It's a nice way to go.
It is like soon as I get me, you know, a couple hundred mil, man, I'm flying that way.
A couple weeks away from that, probably?
Maybe a year. Yeah, at least 2 weeks. a little more. It is like, seriously, it does take so much wear and tear off the travel process. We all ride buses. It is modern bus travel when you go wheels up on SWA.
Well, and it's not just, it's obviously the comfort of being in the plane, but it's, I can get there 20 minutes before my flight scheduled to take off.
Seconds.
Yeah.
It takes off when you get there.
Exactly.
Like, we'll go when you're here.
I guess, yeah, for me, I was traveling with the volleyball team, so I had to get there at a particular time. But yeah, even then, it was, we're leaving at 4? Great, I'll be there. I'll be at the airport at 3:45.
Ah, but you got to go through security. No, it pulls right up. You walk down 4 steps, 10 steps, and you walk up the steps. Then you sit down, and then you go.
And then you're just flying, boom, and you're like, all right, well, that was easy. Oh, my God, there's a person with candy.
But it could be quite the league,
yeah,
when it's all said and done. They're going to change the brand. So I love this. I always say every time a consultants in radio used to be a big thing. Like, oh, the consultant's in. They'd be in town for like a week. They'd listen to the station all the time. Then they'd write a report on what all needed to be changed. Everybody, first thing, jingle. Need a new jingle package. Got to freshen that. This kind of, I have not heard this quote, but just reading it, a brand change. Brett Yormark said the Big 12 brand will be a little different next year.
Next year, you will see a brand refresh, which we're very excited about. We also updated our board on our commercial strategy, which is very important for us as we continue to grow revenue and diversify revenue. And as you saw in an announcement this week, we are taking those efforts in-house for all the right reasons.
Would that potentially include renaming the conference?
No, a refresh is just taking the current visual identity and just contemporizing it and modernizing it. We're not changing our logo at this point in time. But how do we showcase it maybe with different colors and different applications? So it is a refresh. It's not a logo change and certainly not a name change.
New colors.
He used a bunch of syllables to say our banners are going to be a different color, yeah, next year.
Instead of black and red, we're going to go purple. No, I can't go purple. We're going to go monochrome. We're going back to the XII is going away in 12. But he said they're not even changing the logo. I'm like, what?
Yeah, I'm like, well, so what are you, what are you
3D
doing?
He just says color change. I don't know.
We're going to make it 3D.
I don't know. I'll say this.
We're going
this.
From Pantone 175 to Pantone 180.
I need to check myself.
Calibri to Ariel.
Right.
I need to check myself a little as far as the whole, we talk about we don't want to root for our prediction when we're discussing things. I didn't.
Because didn't we have show of hands, this guy going to be a success or
I
not?
Didn't think Yormark was going to do well, and I still have disagreed. Now, look, if he can expand the conference, we'll see. But so I just want to say I'm coming from a place where I did not think he would be overly successful, so maybe I'm being harsher than is warranted because that was my prediction. But that just sounds like a person who's had a lot of time in the executive world, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe.
Well, and he's got one of those jobs, too, for you, and rooting for your prediction that, like, oh, it all worked out. Yeah, well, that was going to happen whether he had the job or not.
That's true. Yeah, I like to think I won't do that, that I'll give him due credit if in a few years the Big 12 is, you know, just a hair behind the Big Ten and SEC.
I'll give credit. If expansion was going to happen, then he didn't screw it up. You know, sometimes being a success is just not screwing up the obvious.
George Seifert.
Yeah. I mean, like, oh, it's up and running. Okay, I won't mess with it. Sounds like a plan. But Lebo and I have talked this a couple of times. You know, Todd put together the thing in his first press conference, all his catchphrases.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was so funny.
You know, it was like 40-some of them in, mm-hmm, like one little deal. You know, I don't know. He is either this, and Todd said this, he goes, I'll give him credit for trying things.
Yeah.
You know, I will give him credit for the ACC looks like it's the one that's about to implode and not the Big 12.
Yeah.
And I would have never, ever bet on
13
that.
13 years ago, it was summer of 2010. So it was right around this time, 13 years ago. Anybody thought that?
I would have never, ever bet on that.
Nope.
know, I would have thought it was the Big 12 that was just being ripped apart. And, you know, the league is going to look really different. We're down to, from the old Big 8, how many of the Big 8s have they lost? OU, Mizzou,
Nebraska,
and Colorado. So we're down to only four of the Big 8. And of the four that came over from the Big 12.
One of those is A&M's one,
yeah.
gone.
A&M two, and Texas.
Two is about
Texas,
to be gone, yeah.
So two of those four.
So we're only six of the original Big 12.
Yeah.
Are still in the league.
Yeah, half of the original eight, half of the additional four.
But it's a viable league. It definitely looks like it's going to be the third best league, and I am very pleased to admit that I was wrong. I really thought the ACC was primed to be in a better position. Now we'll you know, it looks like they're in trouble. Time will tell, but
they keep making money.
Yeah.
You mentioned today record $440 million.
I said we'll see if the ACC ends up crumbling the way it looks like it's going to,
right?
Or if they can circle the wagons and make it happen. But yes, there does not seem to be some imminent end to the Big 12.
Nope. It felt very much like we were nearing a cliff edge in 2010, and I don't know. I don't know if that cliff edge is gone, but we certainly feel pretty far away from it now.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm quite intrigued by, you know, if the ACC doesn't crumble soon, and Mike Norvell's the real deal, and he brings Florida State back to power, and Clemson and Florida State are in the playoffs every year, do they have their head on a swivel then? Like, you know, do you really? Because I think if the ACC stays together for 5 years, and they watch Oklahoma go to all of none playoffs and Texas go to one, right? And meanwhile, Alabama and Georgia are dancing all over them. Mm-hmm. LSU goes twice. Tennessee goes once. Florida goes three times. Like the SEC
Missouri
big boys.
K-State's made one.
Well, but then you turn and pivot and K-State's gone three times.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Baylor's gone twice.
Oklahoma State's made one.
Yeah. Like, and all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, do we really, like, if after 5 years, Oklahoma and Texas have gone collectively once, do you want to follow them right into the SEC? Because I don't think I'm not betting on either one of the coaches that Oklahoma and Texas have.
Yeah.
I will bet against both. And you know, if like, okay, yeah, the SEC gets four, but it's Auburn once, it's LSU twice, it's Florida three times, Georgia five times, Alabama four times. You know, it's all your traditional SECs. They're just all getting in. And Texas and OU's on the outside looking in. Or like I said, they get in once. And meanwhile, you know, a couple, on average, 1.75 Big 12s go. Right? And like, and Clemson and Florida State go 5 for 5? Are they going to be wanting to get out of that?
Nope. Maybe we'll just stay here and kick everyone's ass for.
Yeah, Gary years. Gary Parrish said it. He's like, he thinks eventually, like, if Oklahoma doesn't have sellouts, they're going to be the ones that are like, maybe we got this wrong. Right? If they're like going 8-4, and they're struggling to sell out the stadium, they'll look at
walked
it a little
away
different.
From Bedlam.
$440 million distributed to 10 members. That's a record. That's up from 426, as Curtis said. New numbers. It was 345 in 2021, 377 in 19 and 20, the 19-20 school year. So a record amount of revenue being distributed. Also said the league is discussing extending its championship sites, Arlington for football and baseball, Kansas City for basketball, Oklahoma City for softball. So we'll see. Sounds good for us here in Kansas City. Let's hear a little bit about the NBA Finals. Nuggets up 1-0. Michael Malone, their head coach, knew his players were ready for game one.
You know, I reminded our group, if they didn't know that Miami went into Milwaukee and won game one, they went into the Garden in New York City and won game one. They won game one up in Boston. So we did not want them coming in here taking control of the series on our court. To your point, we've done a hell of a job all season long of protecting our home court. I don't think we've lost a game at home in the playoffs as of yet. And we know Sunday night's going to be a hell of a challenge.
I wonder if that was a little bit of, Bill Self, if I'm not mistaken, we haven't lost in the playoffs yet. I'm sure he knows they haven't. Maybe he doesn't.
Well, his pregame speech was, each one of the stops that Miami went in and won on the road. Like, that's not happening here.
Yeah, it was a great work on the in the pregame. They began the telecast with that video. It was really cool.
It was really good. NBA news. Suns finalizing a deal to hire Frank Vogel. It's all fixed.
Yep.
Frank Vogel. Good to know. Good to know. NFL news. Bills linebacker Von Miller, recovering from an ACL, says he feels he'll be ready to play in the 23 season opener against the Jets. I feel great. I feel comfortable. I feel like I'll be ready to go at the start of the season. You buy it?
Not entirely.
If you're the Bills, don't rush that guy back. You need him at the end of the year, not at the beginning of the year.
No, and you can figure it out until then.
That's my worry with Allen. I think they've got two guys that you could be like, I care more, if you're a Bills fan, I care more about what he looks like in December than September.
Don't be rushing this thing back. Like, you know, I think the Bills are over the get the home field advantage, and they just need to get there healthy at the end.
Yeah, I mean, you watched Cincinnati 2 years in a row beat you to the AFC Championship and 1 year of the Super Bowl without home field advantage.
So when you've got the quarterback, you can win. I don't think anybody wants to come to Kansas City, but like, don't be, you know, overstressing your players in an effort to get it. Tonight, the Royals back in action against the Rockies. Jordan Lyles, 0-9 with a 7.3. That's right, 0-9. Chase Anderson for the Rocks, 0-0 with a 131. KC minus 125. 0-9, Jordan Lyles, 7.3 ERA. Minus 125. Rockies have played better baseball of late, too. So they're playing better ball. News today, Amir Garrett placed on the 15-day DL. This is retroactive back to May 29th. Left elbow valgus extension overload.
Also called pitcher's elbow. I looked that up.
I'm proud of you. You're all grown up.
Inquiring minds wanted to know.
Jackson Kowar recalled from AAA Omaha. How about Jackson Kowar stay?
It'd be nice.
Pitch well enough to stay and be a weapon out of the bullpen.
I don't know. Can he come back up again? I mean,
You can go up and down.
No, by rule. But if he is up and then has to get sitting back down because he's not pitching well, like how many times can the same guy come up? I'm meaning it more in the overarching idea of until you realize he ain't doing it.
He was pretty good. Didn't he just have the one couple of inning outing when he came up that one time? They were kind of in a similar position, and they needed somebody, and he went 2 1/3 and mop up.
Something like that. That sounds familiar.
I'm trying to look at what his big league numbers are, and of course I'm not. There he is right there. 2 1/3, no hits, 2 walks, 3 Ks. But, you know, like to see him come up, be part of the equation moving forward.
Sure.
It would certainly help. All right, we'll talk some NBA Finals. Tim Bontemps is going to be with us, NBA writer from ESPN. We break down the finals next.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk some NBA basketball. Our coverage of the NBA Finals is brought to you by our friends at the University of Kansas Health System. If you suffer an injury, an orthopedic injury in everyday life or playing sports, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care. They're right there, 435 and all in Overland Park. Weekdays, it's 8 to 7. Saturdays, 8 to 2. If you got the youth sports on Friday or maybe even Saturday mornings, you get a sprain, a strain, a fracture, joint injuries. They happen in everyday life and playing sports. Get over there. They can see you. Walk-in care. That's right. No appointment necessary. It's the University of Kansas Health System's walk-in clinic. Just go to kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics for more details. Let's talk NBA basketball. Game one is in the books, and the Nuggets looked pretty damn good. Tim Bontemps is with us from ESPN. He joins us here in the program, writes about the NBA. Tim, first of all, how'd I do on the last name?
Bontemps, but close enough. It's been a lot worse.
So
don't worry about that.
Yeah, full disclosure, Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen, great Cajun restaurant here in town. Like Le Bonton, I can't remember what the phrase is, but Vic, their fine owner, says it real fast in the Cajun accent and everything. Bontemps means good times, right?
That is correct. Good times and good weather. Yeah. Things can mean a lot worse things, so I'll take it.
Dude, that I think it maybe is the greatest last name ever. Dude, you're a charmed man to have good times. Like, if my name were Seren Good Times, holy cow, I'd be on top of the world. So I'm proud of you. Nice job. That's awesome. That's awesome. All right.
Appreciate that.
Let's talk about these NBA finals. What do we think? Are the Nuggets as dominant as this first game appeared, or do the Heat have an off day? What do you make of game one?
I mean, look, Miami obviously couldn't hit a three, right? And if you go back, I mean, I was covering the Eastern Conference Finals, and the Heat went 28-for-58 from three over the final two games, and Max Strus and Caleb Martin were hitting shots left and right, and then both of them couldn't hit the far side of the barn in game one. So that's certainly one thing you could point to if you're Miami, where you could say, hey, you know, if we hit some shots in game two, this thing could look a lot different. But to me, I came into this series thinking it wasn't going to be very competitive, and that was only tripled down in a reinforcement with the way this game one went. I mean, you know, if you're going to beat Denver, you need to make Nikola Jokic into a scorer. You have to keep him. What he wants to do is score 10 points and have 15 assists, right? Despite the fact that he obviously is a tremendous scorer and scores a lot of points normally. He's at his best and is most comfortable when he's just hanging out in the post, swinging passes all over the place, and hitting guys for threes. And you watch as this game played out, Denver was just operating with Jokic either out of the high post or the low post, running the two-man game with Jamal Murray, and he was just diming guys up left and right and tearing Miami's defense apart. And I think in game two, the Heat have to really try to limit the others as much as they can, which is easier said than done, we're given the amount of talent that Denver has around Jokic. And to me, you really have to try to make him have to score 40 to beat you. And they did not, Miami did not do that in game one and got roasted as a result.
Is the reality that the zone that they've played so much of more than anybody, I think the stat I saw was on SportsCenter was that they had played more minutes in zone than the rest of the playoff teams combined. Is reality that when you just let him work freely up there that he's going to pick you apart and they've got to play more man?
Here's the reality of the situation. The Miami Heat are in the NBA Finals because they were the most poised team in the Eastern Conference Playoffs. Right. You go back to the first round, they played Milwaukee. They were down 15 or 16 in the fourth quarter of game four and five. They come back and win both games. You go to this series against the Celtics. Boston melted down in the third quarter of game one, melted down in the fourth quarter of game two, melted down in the second and third quarters of game seven. Miami with Jimmy Butler was always poised, always disciplined, always knew where to be. Right. In the NBA Finals, the problem the Heat have is they're not as good as Denver, and Denver is as poised as them. And that is why I did not think this series is going to be very competitive. But yes, the zone is a problem, right? But Miami was able to use the zone because Boston couldn't figure out what to do against it, right? They would get discombobulated and start throwing the ball around and not running proper zone offense, and they would just sort of be scatterbrained. You put the ball in Nikola Jokic's hands, your team is never scattering. They know exactly where to be. He's one of the greatest passers we've ever seen, let alone among big men. He's easily the biggest, best passer of all time. And he can take apart any defense. And when you look at the Heat, who, you know, Eric Spoelstra is easily the best coach in the league, and they've got Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, and then they're putting this thing together with scotch tape and you know, and wood glue around them. You know, they're using zone, they're doing all this stuff, and you can get away with that against teams that get confused. The Denver Nuggets aren't going to get confused because Nikola Jokic has the ball. And that, ultimately, that's why I didn't think this could be a very competitive series, because I don't want to say smoke and mirrors because that's disrespectful to Miami, but all of the advantages that Miami had against more talented teams in the East don't exist against Denver. And you saw that come to the fore in game one. And it's why I just honestly don't think, you know, barring some truly lights out shooting performances for Miami, that this is going to be a very competitive series.
They had won six in a row, the Nuggets, coming into this game. They were 12-3 overall in these playoffs, now 13-3, seven in a row. So clearly they look like they're flexing their muscle. I agree the Nuggets look great, and maybe it's as simple as the NBA Finals were actually won in the second round when they beat the Suns, or maybe even when Chris Paul was injured, and maybe that decided it right there that, okay, the Nuggets are the best team. What's the disconnect? Why only and listen, I had Jamal Murray on my NBA fantasy team, so I know that there were a lot of rest days for him coming back off the knee injury, because that's frustrating when you play in a daily lineup league and you're not getting a game from him. So I'm very well aware of how they had to bring him along, and Michael Porter Jr. got some of those days as well. I had him also on my fantasy team. So I understand, like, one of the simple answers to the question I'm gonna ask you is that, well, you know, now they're playing all their guys all the time. But if the Nuggets are so good, why did they only win 53 games?
Well, they were the dominant team in the Western Conference the entire season. They essentially clinched the conference on March 1st. And then they spent the last month of the season goofing off, basically. Right? I mean, they were not very good down the stretch. They, you know, and at the time, the question was, all right, is Denver sort of, you know, goofing off, as Michael Malone said, their coach a few times, like, we're just not disciplined, we're not locked in right now, we have nothing to play for, and it shows. Or were they sort of scuffling into the playoffs and was it going to be a problem, right? It's very clear that it was the former, and they were just goofing off. And when they got into the playoffs, they turned it back up a notch and were the dominant team again. And I will again go back to the fact that there were three elite teams in the Eastern Conference all season, and none of them are playing in the NBA Finals, right? Yeah. And if Milwaukee or Philly or Boston was playing in the Finals, I think it would be a far more competitive series. But ultimately, Jimmy Butler was so much more poised and disciplined, and therefore his team was so much more poised and disciplined, that the Heat were able to take those teams down. And so now they've gotten here to the finals. And like I said, that's the weird juxtaposition of this matchup, is that Miami is not as talented as Denver, but the reason they're here is because of their poise and discipline, and Jokic matches that. And that's where I just don't really know what the Heat are supposed to do. Like, you look at this game last night, they come down in the first quarter to get Aaron Gordon going inside over and over again, because you have Caleb Martin and Max Strus and Jimmy Butler and Gabe Vincent out there on the court. Aaron Gordon's twice as big as all of those guys.
Right.
So he's just able to duck in for post-ups. Jokic drops him the ball and he gets a layup three or four times. Like, they just have all of these systematic advantages with their size and speed and shooting ability that, again, it's very reductive analysis, but short of Miami just shooting the lights out in game two, I just don't really see what they can do to slow this Denver team down, unless Denver has just, again, a horrible shooting night. And if you have Nikola Jokic diming you up for wide open shot after wide open shot, and as you said, going up against the zone and really being able to take it apart, I just don't really know where the Heat are supposed to go from there.
Tim Bontemps is with us, covers the NBA for ESPN. I've been on a big kick about how good Eric Spoelstra is as a coach. I think his end game, he's just dusted some of his counterparts in these playoffs so far. But I think he's starting to get his credit. You know, the personnel is great for the Nuggets. And really, they've been on the precipice of doing this for maybe 3 years and just haven't been healthy the last couple of years.
Yep.
You know, when you look at their record with Jamal Murray in the postseason without Jamal Murray, it's like I was tracking it through the first couple of series. I think there's something like now they're about like maybe pushing like 30-10 over the last four years when he plays, because he didn't play the last 2 years in the postseason, just in the games overall. And, you know, they're just a night and day. But is Mike Malone – I deserve more credit? You mentioned being just as poised. Poised could be seen as another way to say well coached, right? At the end, is he the equal to Spoelstra, or at least, you know, much closer than a lot of the other coaches have been when they've matched up with him?
I don't know. I mean, Eric's the best coach in the league, and I think your analysis of him is spot on, and I do think he's getting the credit for it. But I also think that Michael Malone has done a phenomenal job with this team. And even, you know, obviously, you know, I work in the media. I know Michael. I think he's a very entertaining guy. He's obviously taken a lot of jabs at the media mm-hmm. over the past few weeks, right, for various reasons. Some of them, I would say, are fair critiques. Some of them, I would say, are a little insane. but by doing that, he has instilled a massive chip on the shoulder of every player on his team, right? Where they've sort of successfully, as the number one seed in the Western Conference all season and the dominant team in the Western Conference all season, they've been able to wave around the flag of nobody believes in us anyway, right? And I think Michael has done a phenomenal job of connecting with his team and finding the right buttons to push to get them where they want to go. And like to me, you go back when you sort of casually mentioned it earlier, Denver was far better than Phoenix that entire series. It wasn't really that competitive. In the two games that Phoenix won, Kevin Durant and Devin Booker combined to score about 9,000 points on 90% shooting. And only then did Phoenix barely win, right? Like, it wasn't like they won those games by 20. They were games that were back and forth in the final 5 minutes. And, you know, if Denver had made an extra basket or two, they might have swept. So they have been the dominant team of the playoffs. And I think, you know, when you talk about, you know, where Malone stands among coaches, what I think stands out most about this matchup is we've seen all sorts of coaches get fired over the last month, right? Mike Budenholzer in Milwaukee won a title. Nick Nurse, I was just at his press conference in Philly yesterday, won a title in Toronto, had a ton of success there. Monty Williams just got hired in Detroit this week, had a ton of success in Phoenix, got them to the NBA Finals for the first time in decades, right? Like, all of those coaches did phenomenal jobs where they were at and were there for 3, 4, 5 years. Teams decided they had enough. Michael Malone has been in Denver for a decade. Eric Spoelstra has been in Miami for 15 years. There were times, you know, certainly early on in the Big Three era, there was a lot of noise about maybe the Heat should fire Eric Spoelstra. There was, you know, when Denver lost to Minnesota in that final game of the regular season, that was sort of the first 8-9 play-in game, and Denver missed the playoffs with 46 or 47 wins. There were certainly people at the time who said, well, maybe you should move on from Michael Malone to get a new coach. You know, and if Denver had done that, nobody would have really, there would have been no uproar about that. Nobody would have gone crazy about that. But by sticking with him and believing in what he was doing, this team has a belief system and a culture that has existed now for 7, 8, 9 years. And like you said, even just referring to those stats, they have history to fall back on together. And you've seen that come to the fore throughout this playoff run. And he deserves an immense amount of credit for where Denver is and why they're, I think, very likely to be NBA champions in the next 10 days or so.
Tim Bontemps does a great job covering the NBA for ESPN. A couple real quick. I just want to get your thoughts on some of the stuff away sure. from the finals. And that is the contract of Monty Williams. Like, I couldn't figure out why the Suns were firing Monty Williams, but I'm not privy to what goes on inside. Maybe you had some stars that were rubbed the wrong way, and we know the stars aren't going to lose in those situations. But was there the kind of bidding war I think there must have been for him to get the kind of deal he ended up getting with the Pistons?
Well, there was a bidding war of one. This is very simple. Monty Williams wanted to take a year off, and the Pistons bought him out of it. That's really very simply what happened. You know, he got offered more money than I think any coach in the history of the NBA.
Yes.
And he said, well, I guess I can go live in Detroit. And it's really that simple. Every indication was he was going to take a year off and recharge a little bit, and then he got an offer too good to pass up, and now he's coaching the Pistons.
Yeah, I think he can really coach. What was the Suns' problem, right? You lose Chris Paul, that's a big problem. And plus you're still just trying to, Kevin Durant wasn't even there to start the year and he was hurt for a long time. Like, trying to put all those pieces together, what the hell did they expect?
Well, I thought Monty Williams handled something poorly. I didn't like how he handled the Jay Crowder situation last season. I didn't like how he handled the DeAndre Ayton situation going back to the end of the prior season. But those are separate matters from what you're talking about, which is they make the trade for Kevin Durant midseason. You never see teams win when making trades like that midseason because you need time to gel and put the team together and figure out the right pieces to put around those guys. Kevin Durant, they get hurt. They play 8 games together before the playoffs. I did not understand why so many of my colleagues just assumed they were going to roll through the West when they never played together. You saw that in the Denver series. They did not. They were not able to keep up with the team with the continuity and consistency of the Denver Nuggets. And then there's the fact that the Suns just don't have that much talent. They have Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, but people are getting mad at Monty Williams for choosing the wrong guy from, you know, Josh Okogie and Torrey Craig and Landry Shamet and Jock Landale and Bismack Biyombo. Like they, because of the Kevin Durant trade, they just didn't have enough depth. And then Chris Paul wasn't playing very well and then got hurt, right? You put all that together, I don't really see what they were supposed to do beyond that, beyond what they did. But as I mentioned before, we saw a lot of really good coaches change teams or get let go over the last month, because in a year where things are so wide open, there's a lot of disappointment. And when there's a lot of disappointment, there's a lot of change. And that happened with coaches, and I think this summer it's going to happen with players.
Should the Sixers even want James Harden back?
Yes. James Harden is a really good player. They should definitely want him back. I can understand the question based off his playoff issues. That said, the Sixers were really close with Joel Embiid at less than 100% to beating Boston. I think if they beat Boston, I think they would have been in the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
And they played probably the team that's the single worst matchup for them in the entire NBA and nearly beat them. And now they're going to have, I think, you know, I thought Doc Rivers did a really good job. You know, I would have understood if they brought him back. I think Nick Nurse in-game is a better tactician than Doc Rivers. I think he will help potentially get that team another level up. And I think Daryl Morey has shown he has the ability to augment and improve teams over time. And I expect them to be aggressive and continuing to try to add talent to the roster. So, you know, I would want James Harden back. And I think that if he comes back, Philly will be right there to contend again for a title. And I will say this, if James Harden doesn't come back, I suspect that Daryl Morey will have a plan to get talent in there around Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid to keep the Sixers competitive in the East.
40 times in Major League Baseball, the NFL, and the NHL, there has been a stretch where in 5 years there have been 5 different champions. It's been 40 years since that happened in the NBA. It's going to happen this year with whoever wins this series. Is this the new NBA? Is this just a quick little cycle we're going through, or is reality that the NBA is now much more wide open than it's ever been?
I do think this is a new reality for where the NBA is at. When you look at where the new CBA is taking the league, you know, I think it's going to become more like the NFL. You know, you go back to, you know, 30 years ago when I was a kid, teams like the Cowboys and the Niners and the Bills had 7, 8, 9, 10 Hall of Famers at a time, right? Now, you know, I mean, you guys in Kansas City is a great example. When Patrick Mahomes is on the rookie contract, like all the, you know, when Russell Wilson was on the rookie contract in Seattle, when Lamar Jackson was on the rookie contract in Baltimore, you're able to soup up the team with a lot of talent around those guys. And then when Patrick Mahomes gets the mega deal, well, then Tyreek Hill leaves and you start peeling away other guys, right? And I think that's what we're going to see in the NBA going forward with these new rules about, you know, it's essentially not a hard cap, but a harder cap on spending with some of the restrictions they've put in place. So you're not going to see a team like the Kevin Durant Warriors again, I don't think. You're going to see teams where there's one, maybe two stars making a ton of money. And then, you know, sort of like Phoenix, right? The Phoenix is a good example. They have Kevin Durant and Devin Booker making a ton of money, and then they've got DeAndre Ayton, and then they're filling it around with minimum salaries. And I think you're going to see a lot more flawed teams. I think you're going to see a lot more, you know, one injury could really derail a team. You look at the Milwaukee Bucks, Giannis gets hurt. Obviously, he's one of the best players on the planet, but Giannis gets hurt, and they're out basically in 5 games in the first round, far earlier than they were supposed to be. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with that. But I don't think it's a coincidence, as you laid out, that we see a lot more teams contending for titles now than we have in the past. And I think the era of, you know, I shouldn't say the era of dominant teams are over, because I think what could happen is, like, for example, this Denver team is pretty young and is built around Nikola Jokic, and these guys are generally under contract. So perhaps a team like Denver can rip off a few finals in a row. But I also think that I wouldn't look at this Denver team and say they are like the 15-16 Warriors. But in a depressed talent environment around the league, you could see a team like this rise up. But I do think that overall, we're going to see more parity across the league, talent spread out more, things being more wide open. And as a result, we're going to see, I think, more churn in terms of what teams are making the finals and, a lot more opportunity for teams to win a championship than we've historically seen in the NBA.
Time for our Final Four with Tim Bontemps. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have a middle school, high school, or college athlete home for the summer, enroll your child in summer youth athlete training at the Sports Medicine and Performance Center. 10-week program starts on June 5th, so let's go. Get them signed up right now. June 5th through August 11th, go to kansashealthsystem.com/sportsperformance for more. Four quickies, just one or two words. Tell me what comes to mind, Tim. I'll start you with this. Series prediction, Nuggets in, I can tell, I know Nuggets is going to be the answer, in how many games?
Honestly, after watching last night, I'm going to say four. I would have said five before, but I'll say four now.
Nuggets and four. Got it. Who should go number two in the NBA draft?
That's a great question. I don't have a quick answer to that. I will say Scoot Henderson, I guess. I think he's got an incredibly high floor and an incredibly high ceiling. Really talented G League Ignite prospect. If you want to say Brandon Miller, fine, but I would say Scoot Henderson.
All right. You said a couple of insane jabs that Mike Malone took at the media. What was his most insane jab?
I don't know if I can remember any of them off the top of my head, but he's been on a crusade against the media, and I respect it. I appreciate what he's doing, and he's pushed every right button. And full credit to Michael for the way he handled the playoff.
He's clearly positioned it as, like, I love it. Like, you guys think it's going to be easy. Like you're channeling your inner Nick Saban there. I'm waiting for him to throw a rat poison at us. should be good. All right, finally, most importantly, should Monty Williams actually make more money per year than Andy Reid?
I didn't know he made more money than Andy Reid.
How about this? He is the fifth highest paid coach in American professional sports at $13.1 million. In front of him, Sean McVay, 14, Pete Carroll, 15, Sean Payton, 18, and Bill Belichick, 20. I assume this will be corrected before the season begins, but now he makes more than Andy Reid.
I think the better question is, why is Andy Reid making less than several of those guys? I think that's rather than Monty Williams. I don't take money out of Monty's pocket, but I would, if I was Andy, I'd be looking at some of those guys and saying, hey, I've had especially recently, a better run of success than several of them have had. So I would be, I'd be asking for a raise if I was Andy Reid, and I suspect he'll be getting one.
Yeah, I think it'll probably be announced sometime right before the season that's gotten done. Tim, you're the man. Great stuff. We love reading your work. Keep it up, and hopefully we get a chance to talk to you on down the road.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
There he is, Timmy Goodtimes, Tim Bontemps, ESPN NBA writer, does a fantastic job covering the NBA. We always appreciate his time. He's brought to you by our friends at the University of Kansas Health System. Of course, they've got those sports performance classes right now. If you got a middle school, high school, or college athlete home for the summer, enroll them right now in the youth athlete training sports. Sports is going to be coming up this fall. If you want your athlete in midseason form to start the school year, they got a 10-week program. It starts June 5th. So let's go. Get signed up right now. June 5th to August 11th. Go to kansashealthsystem.com/sportsperformance for more information. Developmental classes, sports performance class, ages 8 to 12, 12 and up. They got female sports performance classes, ages 12 and up. If you've got an athlete, they've got a class that's perfect for their athletic training. Go to kansashealthsystem.com/sportsperformance. We'll wrap things up with the kicker next.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, a good sense, end of the hour answer. Who was the first player ever to hit three home runs in the ninth inning or later in a single postseason?
Three home runs, ninth inning or later, single postseason. I don't know. Alex Gordon, I'll take a shot. Did he do that?
Was a former Royal. Raul Labañez of the Yankees in 2012. Two in the ALDS, one in the LCS.
Raul Labañez, good guy.
Awesome
glad
guy.
He's one of the guys. You know, a little record book action there for Raul Labañez. A little sub action for you. Good Sense. Go to GoodSenseSubs.com to put your order in right now if you want to pick it up for some dinner on your way home. Put a party tray order in for the weekend if you're having any festivities. Those party trays are great. The meats, cheeses, sliced right when they make the sandwich. Bread, that's made fresh twice each day. Pillowy soft. It's the best. Freshest veggies in town. I'll tell you what. I would eat just the veggies, and I have, as a matter of fact. Go to GoodSenseSubs.com to put your order in right now, founded in Lenexa, Kansas. Before we let you go, how about Russell Wilson was almost a Philadelphia Eagle last year?
Wow.
So when you think like, oh, we knew what we had, Jalen Hurts, we loved him, we knew he was going to be great, they were sniffing around about Russell Wilson in Philadelphia as well. How different would it look if Russell Wilson had ended up with the Eagles? I don't know. Maybe it would have been great. Maybe you got a coach there and that would have done a fantastic job, but could have looked real, real different.
Chiefs would have played somebody else in the Super Bowl.
I think so. We'll see if Russell Wilson can get it done now with Sean Payton there with the Broncos. That's going to do it for us. Thanks for joining us this week. We're back at it Monday at 2:00.